This is Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Today on Jay Sekulow Live, Jay sits down with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
What I see from where I stand, I can't begin to comprehend.
Things are so desperate, and so many of our church are fleeing, and so much of our work is trying to sustain those who have fled. And to have fled to places like Jordan, Turkey, and Kurdistan. And we are trying to maintain the faith of the people. The faith we can maintain, but so many are being killed and removed and desecrated. Christians are facing the biggest crisis and tragedy that they have ever faced. It's very interesting, when this started to happen a few months ago, the first people who came to my aid was not the Christians, it was the Jews. They said, we have been there before. We know the pain, we know the difficulty.
And now your host, Than Bennett.
Hey everyone, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. I want to wish you a very happy 2016. Hope you're having a great new year. We've got a very special show planned for you today. You're going to be hearing an interview that Jay did with Canon Andrew White. He is the Vicar of Baghdad and has probably done more for the persecuted church in Iraq and the surrounding areas than anyone on the face of the planet. Jay had the opportunity to sit down with him several months back to talk through in great detail about his work, the church that he has in Baghdad, the related work that he has done in the surrounding areas, the fact that he ultimately, against his wishes, had to flee the area because of the direct threats on his life, his continued work through his organization that exists in the region, and then also a call to all of us on how we are to engage on behalf of the persecuted Christians in that region. So you're going to be hearing that interview from Jay and the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White, in the next two segments of the broadcast. But I also want to look forward just a moment here at some of the work that we're going to be doing here at the ACLJ on this issue as we move into 2016. One of the first issues out of the gates for us is going to be this issue of genocide in the region, genocide committed by ISIS, and whether or not this administration is going to acknowledge the fact that ISIS is specifically targeting Christians. There have been reports that the administration is close to designating what is happening as genocide, but those same reports indicate that the administration may leave Christians out of that designation. And this is a very important matter, folks, because that designation of genocide triggers very specific obligations on the president and the United States. One example of that, the United States would have an obligation to work to return any Christians that were the target of genocide to their homelands. That would mean uprooting ISIS in the regions where Christians have been removed, where Christians have been targeted for genocide. The president of the United States does not want to uproot ISIS. He wants to contain them. Therefore, he has been dragging his feet on including Christians in that genocide label. We are supporting legislation that is moving through Congress that would call for the designation of genocide and that would specifically say Christians must be included. The United States has an obligation to help them return to their homeland. So that will be one of the issues that we will be working on right out of the chute. We will be calling on you to stand behind that effort, and we will get specific about how you can do that in the days and weeks to come. But again, in the next segments of the broadcast, you are going to hear from the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White. You are not going to want to miss this interview. And as we go into this first break, if you want to learn about how you can support the work of the ACLJ as we move into 2016, and specifically get educated about the religious persecution and specifically the persecution of Christians in the Middle East leading up to this interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, I want you to go to aclj.org, get yourself educated, and then come back after this break and listen to Jay's interview with Canon Andrew White, the Vicar of Baghdad.
Just believing, I can't stand to see this evil anymore.
When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. This restless
feeling of unease. Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. We are going to jump right into this special interview that Jay did with Canon Andrew White, the Vicar of Baghdad. This is going to be something that you don't want to miss. The personal experience and investment that Canon White has in the region that is now affected by ISIS, where ISIS is targeting and exterminating Christians. Canon White has direct experience in this. He has led the world in caring for the Christians in the region. Jay had the opportunity to sit down several months ago and talk about that experience. Let's go ahead and jump in. Again, this is Jay with Canon Andrew White, the Vicar of Baghdad.
Canon White, let me start with something that we've talked a lot over the years on a lot of issues, but I want to get to something.
And we're still here.
And we're still here. Yeah. And you're still here, which is miraculous, especially with what's been going on where you've been ministering in Iraq. Let's go back a step. How did you end up as an anesthesiologist, trained as an anesthesiologist, how did you end up the Vicar of Baghdad? How did you end up in Baghdad?
Well, I was a gas man. I used to put people to sleep with drugs. Now I can put them to sleep with sermons.
Yeah.
So it started, I suppose, when I was in the grounds of St. Thomas's Hospital in London one day by the River Thames, and my desire in life had been to go to St. Thomas's and study there. And I just stood by the Thames and said, "Thank you, God, for giving me what I've always wanted, to come to the best hospital in the world and study. Thank you for making me a gas man." And then I thought, I better ask God what next. So, what next, Lord? Very dangerous thing to say. And he said, "I want you to go into the church, and the Church of England, the Anglican Church." I said, "But Lord, they're not even all saved." He said, "I want you to go into the Anglican Church." So I fought it. Do you know how long I fought it?
I was going to ask you that question. How long?
Half an hour.
Okay, that's not so bad.
Half an hour, which is a very short time. Most people fight it a lot longer than that. So after I lost that battle, I applied to go off to Cambridge and do my theology. I went to Cambridge to the pastor factory or the vicar factory. You know, where you walk in normally and you walk out like that.
Uh-huh.
So I went there and I was there a few years. I did my Christian theology in 2 years. Look, Christian theology was quite boring. So I changed. I did Judaism and rabbinics. And I did my doctorate work on the role of Israel in Christian theology. So I not only stayed in Cambridge, I went off to Israel and went to Yeshiva, an ultra-Orthodox rabbinic place of learning. You know, the guys with the big black coats and the furry hats. So I became a bit of a Hasid.
Yeah. So there you are, the doctor becomes ordained, I guess, within the Anglican Church in England, ends up studying at an Orthodox Jewish Hasidim seminary, and then you end up in Baghdad. How did that get you? I understand how you end up in seminary. I understand how you go to Israel to study. How about Baghdad?
I was vicar first in London. I was part of the group of churches which were attached to Holy Trinity Brompton. So quite wacky.
Yep.
And then I went to Coventry Cathedral and I became director of the International Center of Reconciliation at Coventry. And I did that for quite a few years, but the work became so big that I really needed a colleague. So I got a co-director, an assistant called Justin Welby. He's now Archbishop of Canterbury, and I'm the vicar of Baghdad.
He was your assistant?
Yeah. Used to be Justin. Now it's your grace. So you love each other. Yeah.
So talk to me about Baghdad. We've discussed this a little bit before over the years, your ministry there. You felt this calling to go.
When I was at Coventry, I felt I should go in the days of Saddam.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get in. And the last thing I did was to call my staff together and say, let's pray about it. And the next day, the invitation came from Tariq Aziz, Saddam's deputy.
Right.
I used to go and see Tariq Aziz in a palace. Now I go and see him in prison.
Yep. Right. When you went to Iraq, what was the state of the church?
When I started at my church in Baghdad, there was nothing. No chairs, just the odd mouse.
Right.
The only living thing in the church were pigeons. Plastic chairs we brought in. We started our service there. I can never forget the first time we worshipped there was just myself and a few of my colleagues with me. A few of my colleagues who incidentally all came from Virginia Beach. Mm. So they were with me for our first service there. But after the war, things changed. First service, my congregation, I looked around and they were nearly all spooks. They were all the CIA and the British intelligence.
So it was American and British. It was our people there.
Yeah, all the intel.
Yeah.
All the intel were there. And they became my really good friends.
Yep.
So we worshipped there. And then the church grew. First week, 100 Iraqis. It grew when all the spooks stopped coming.
So when the CIA and
so
the
So when the
MI5
Americans and the Brits stopped because it was getting too dangerous, we opened it to the Iraqis. First week, 100. Second week, 200. Third week, 300. Fourth week, 400. Mm. I thought, this is quite a good growth rate.
Yeah, wow.
So we grew to about 6,500.
I want everybody to understand that. It went from zero to 6,500 in a period of how long?
In a period of a year and a bit.
Mm. That is some growth.
And we started a clinic. It was quite good with my medical background. So we started a doctor's, a dentist, a pharmacy, a laboratory, everything for healthcare. We started there. And we thought it wouldn't need to run for long because healthcare would improve. I was wrong.
Yeah. Did you serve, by the way, when you were serving the healthcare needs of the community, was it just within the Iraqi Christian community or was it opened up to people that needed care?
95% of our patients are Muslims. Mm. 5% were our own Christian people.
So this was the church really reaching out to the community at large.
It served everybody. People used to say to me, well, how do you preach to the non-Christians? How do you reach Muslims? I said, I don't. I just love them. We just serve them. And all of them have dreams of Yeshua.
Yep.
We call Jesus Yeshua.
Right.
In Israel, we call him Yeshua.
Right.
But in Aramaic, he is Yeshua.
Right.
So I would say that over 70% of our people have had dreams of Jesus. Hmm. And a very large number of our people are actually Muslims, Muslim women. Come to worship every week.
The ministry there is going on in the context of a war. What was that like for the Christian members of your church while the armed conflict was going on in Iraq?
Well, you see, while it was going on, it's still going on.
Right.
And
so it's going on differently now. We'll get to that in a moment. But let's talk about
what eventually happened was a lot of our people started moving back to Nineveh.
Mm.
Nineveh is a traditional homeland of the Christian community. And Nineveh is Christian because once upon a time an evangelist came there, miserable evangelist. He came by submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And 700 years later, another miserable evangelist came.
Yeah.
Here in the West, you call him Doubting Thomas.
Right.
We call him Martoma.
Right.
And he saw all these people believed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he said to them, did you know your Messiah had come? His name is Yeshua. He came in Israel. So he told the people, and they all believed. To this day, until ISIS, the terrorists, turned up a few months ago, Nineveh was all Christian.
Again, folks, that was part one of Jay's interview with Canon Andrew White, the vicar of Baghdad. After this break, we will be back with part two of that interview. If you want to learn more about the work of the ACLJ, both domestically and around the world on behalf of the persecuted church, I want you to go to aclj.org, educate yourself, and after this break, part two of Jay's interview with Canon Andrew White.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
Well, Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are going to jump right back into more of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White, talking about the ISIS persecution of the Christian church in that region and Canon White's work in the region. Again, this is Jay with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
So what was daily life like? Let's pre-ISIS. Even during the conflict, of course, there's real conflict now. It's a whole different ballgame, actually, and we'll talk about ISIS in a moment. But what was the day like for the persecuted Christians in Iraq?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Even though everything was awful, we were so happy. Mm. And the media came once, they were making a film about me, and they said to one of our young people, how is it that all of you are so happy when we are surrounded by bombers and your people are being killed and everything is terrible? And she said, when you've lost everything, Jesus is all you've got left. And so even though we have lost everything, we haven't lost our Lord. So we're happy.
Let's talk about during the conflict, the first phase of the conflict. We're still in it. That's obviously about to increase significantly in the next few months. But let's talk about where we were. We have a lot of mutual friends and a lot of friends of mine that with the Department of Justice were serving in Iraq as well on the legal issues and rebuilding the government. So I got to get reports on how you were doing from them. We of course talked and met in Israel a number of times. But let's talk about the ministry aspect of you've always had a heart for reconciliation. That's been a driving force of who you are. How does that play out, so to speak, in the context of the Middle East? Because you and I worked on Gilead Shalit's case. I mean, we could talk about so many. You've worked on people that have been kidnapped, ransomed. Tell me how that Ministry of Reconciliation works in the portion of the world, the Middle East, which is right now and has been for 2,000 years or longer, one of the key conflict points in the world. How do you do a Ministry of Reconciliation to factions that are often warring with each other?
A Ministry of Reconciliation in the Middle East is simply about love. You love, love, and love. When you have enemies, you bring them together. When you have opposition, the best thing you can do is that invite them to eat with you. When we meet, we eat. And I invited ISIS to come and eat with me. And they said, if we come, we kill you. So they didn't come.
I want to talk about ISIS in a moment, but I want to talk about your meet and eat idea, because I you probably are not aware of this. You were consulting with us on a situation a few years back where the Greek Orthodox Church had elected a new patriarch. And there was, because of an Ottoman-era decree, you had all of these different checkoffs you had to have. You had to have the Jordanians agree, the Palestinian authorities, and the Israelis. And as soon as we'd get one government to agree, the next government would not. We were representing the Greek Orthodox there, but we've done a lot of work with the Israeli government as well. And I remember you and I went to lunch, and I said, what is the key to success on this? How do I get these people at the table to work this out? And you said, get them to eat. I don't know if you even remember that, but what happened that night, we were at the King David Hotel in the famous Ben-Gurion room where the Declaration of Independence was signed, and I had the representatives, the lawyers from the Greek Orthodox Patriarch, the elected patriarch, Israeli government officials, Jordanian officials, and they would not eat. But I remembered what you said about the eating, so I starved them, basically. So at 11 o'clock at night at the King David, I asked the manager of the King David to keep the kitchen open. He knew what was going on. I said, I am ordering food. If you don't want to eat it, don't eat it, but I'm ordering food. So we ordered the appropriate food for the table, and of course, they all ate. We met, got it mostly worked out. I went to the house on Shabbat of Ehud Olmert, who was then the Prime Minister of Israel, worked the rest of it out, and they signed off. Little things like that culturally become very significant. People don't... Will you talk about the understanding that when you've got reconciliation, the cultural context of understanding the culture, the anthropology of the situation, the sociology of the
You've
situation.
You've got to be contextualized. I'll never forget the words of Longfellow, the American poet. He said, who is my enemy? It is a person whose story I have not heard. Recently, I brought together the Israeli religious leaders, the chief rabbis, and the Iraqi religious leaders, the Ayatollahs. One of the rabbis said, I've come here for 3 days. I've been here, and I've got three words to say. Fear is cancelled. The Ayatollah said, I came here hating Israel, hating you Jews, and then I've seen you. I've eaten with you. I've heard your story. And now I love you. So eating together is key.
On the reconciliation issue, you've dealt with hostage situations. We went to a friend of yours who was a member of the Knesset when Gilad Shalit, the Israeli young boy at the time, 19 years old, was kidnapped by Hamas. And we were first detailed over there, you and I, to find out if he was alive. And you got on the phone. I will never forget this one either. In fact, I keep the note of it in my passport. We went to, trying to think who the member of the Knesset was. Was it Malkior?
Malkior, yeah.
And you got on the phone an Ayatollah, an imam within Hamas, to make sure he was alive. And we reconfirmed that he was. But you've done these kind of, this is another form of reconciliation, obviously. But let's talk about, you've worked on over 160 hostage situations. Obviously, it's an important part of your ministry.
I've only got back alive 43.
Right. Well, let's talk about how the process starts. I mean, is it a call into the office? How does this happen? I mean, or do you...
How it happens is, first of all, you hear the story. You know the story. You have to ascertain who it is who's actually got them. And when you know most of the bad guys, like I do, you have a good idea. So you ascertain who it is that they have got. And then you try and find out what they want. If it's political, it's more complex. If it's money, financial gain they want, it's a lot easier and hopeful. I never forget, I adopted lots of Iraqi children. One of them's here with me today. And they were only little. And my boy, Dawood, he was about 12 at the time. And I was looking for two Italian girls who had been kidnapped in Iraq. We found out who had them, and we did a deal. They wanted $40 million for each person, and I got it down to $20 million each. And so... we loaded up the car with money, which came from a country which never pays for hostages, like right. All the countries never do.
Right.
But they give us lots of money anyway.
Right.
So we drove it to them. We arranged to get the girls back at the same time as we handed the money over. So we did it.
Again, folks, that was part of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White. After this break, you will hear more from that interview. Folks, if you want to learn more about the ACLJ's work on behalf of the persecuted church around the world, I want you to go to aclj.org. There's a lot of information there about the work in the ISIS-controlled region and around the world, folks. Again, aclj.org. And after this break, you'll hear more from Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We are going to jump right back into more of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White, talking about the ISIS persecution of the Christian church in that region and Canon White's work in the region. Again, this is Jay with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
So that was a successful conclusion.
Yeah.
Not all of them are.
No, most aren't. That was a quick one. And when it's money, it's a lot easier.
When you said it's political, it's much more difficult. Give me some details on that. What does that mean?
Well, one of the cases I worked on, they wanted the release of one of their big terrorist leaders called Qais Hazali. And we worked on trying to release these people for 6 years. The people taken were my bodyguards.
Mm.
And eventually, most of them got killed. Some of them were saved. It was so hard, so difficult. Eventually, this person was released. It was very complex.
That's a very different scenario then than dealing with a group like ISIS today.
Yes.
I want to pivot to that. So as the church in Baghdad was ministering and you were doing the outreach and there was, I know you had incoming and you had military situations and people died during the conflict, then ISIS comes on the scene. Mm. And I want to draw a distinction because a lot of people are not picking up on this. I am starting to use the word jihadist army rather than terrorists, because when we think of terrorists, we think of Al-Qaeda, hiding in caves, individual cell groups. We don't think of a standing army controlling resources, money, territory, states, basically. They're not. We don't recognize them as states, but they operate like states. Very different than the Al-Qaeda model.
And they're controlling many of the American military facilities which were left for the Iraqi army.
Right.
ISIS have now got them in their control.
When ISIS got into power in various portions of Iraq and, of course, into Syria, yeah. How did that impact your ministry? I mean, I know ultimately how it did, but I want to get people there to understand the process. So ISIS comes on the scene last summer, basically. They'd been around about a year before then, broke off from Al-Qaeda in Iraq. AQI thought they were too violent. Al-Baghdadi declares himself the caliph. When did you start seeing them as a threat?
Well, we knew always that they were a threat. One of the things which leads people towards terrorism is when they have lost something. And there the Sunni minority had lost a lot under al-Maliki. They had lost things because of the de-Ba'athification. They had lost control of their businesses. They had lost money. But ultimately, they had lost power. And that loss was what drove them to evil terrorist activity. And what they wanted to do was to show that we still have power. We can blow you up. We can destroy you. And those who are not with us are against us.
And those that are not with us and those that are against us does not just include Jews and Christians. They've been equal opportunity killers, in a sense, because they go
That's
after everyone.
That's very interesting, calling them equal opportunity.
Yeah, they don't discriminate.
Because the biggest targets of ISIS at the moment are not Christian, they are not Shia, they are Sunni.
That do not agree with their version
their
of Sunni Islam.
Their own people who do not follow them, who do not support their terrorist activity, they will kill them. So they are killing them in Al-Anbar, what used to be the key Sunni area.
Again, folks, that was part of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White. After this break, you will hear more from that interview. Folks, if you want to learn more about the ACLJ's work on behalf of the persecuted church around the world, I want you to go to aclj.org. There's a lot of information there about the work in the ISIS-controlled region and around the world, folks. Again, aclj.org. And after this break, you'll hear more from Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org. Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic: How Unelected, Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. We're going to jump right back into more of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White, talking about the ISIS persecution of the Christian church in that region and Canon White's work in the region. Again, this is Jay with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
Let me take it a step further on the personal side of this. You've been ministering in Iraq for years. You had to leave. You've got a lot of people that have left. Let's talk about what the catalyst of having to leave, what it meant to you personally, and what was the events that got it to that point.
Well, I always said to my people, I will never leave you. Don't you leave me. And eventually, the threats against me, us, became so great.
Where were those threats coming from?
They were coming from people connected with the bad guys, which
ISIS.
Were ISIS.
Yeah.
And they were not in Baghdad. We were in the heart of Baghdad. And even though I confess that recently I have been back in Baghdad, but partly it was because I needed my treatment
right.
for my MS,
right.
which we had only devised in our own clinic in Baghdad. Mm. So I had to go.
Right.
And the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, said to me, he said, Andrew, you're more use alive than dead, so you can't be there. And I thought about it, and I thought what I could do alive and what I could not do if I wasn't alive. And basically, my people would have no hope. They would have no food. They'd have no work, they'd have no future.
So you go to a situation where, I know you've got a lot of displacement now, going into Jordan. Jordan, before we get to the displacement and what you're doing now with these young kids and education, I want to talk about ISIS because you were there. You know, I've looked at it legally, I've looked at it politically, I've written about it, we've studied it. Our view is they have to be crushed. There's no negotiations with them. This is not where you can have any kind of dialogue. This is not even the Iranians. This is a whole different element of evil. You've been there. You've seen it firsthand. What do you do with them?
I've tried.
And you're a guy that does reconciliation. I mean, that's your ministry.
I've tried. It can't work.
Why?
Why? Because they feel they have lost so much and they're going to make the others lose as much as they've lost.
Yet they're attracting educated people. They're attracting people that had businesses. They're attracting young people that had college degrees from England, from the United States, from Canada. This is it's an interesting sociological dynamic. They're attracting, they treat women horribly, but yet they're attracting women. There's a case right now where three young girls from Britain have gone through Turkey to get to Iraq and Syria to join up with ISIS and to go through that. And these were modern Muslim younger women.
But stupid.
Well, stupid, and they may not come out
alive. And they want to, what is it? Once again, demonstrate the power of Islam. Mm. And they're not prepared to see that it hasn't got power. And they're not prepared to see that the power is being diminished by the West.
Has ISIS reached a point militarily that people are saying this, the Christian population of Iraq is basically gone? Is that an overstatement?
No, it's not.
Nineveh?
I feel quite tearful when you say that.
Yeah.
Because it is really difficult and really true. I'm looking after my people now in Jordan and in Kurdistan in the north. And they have fled from their historic homeland. And they have nothing left. But we will give them hope. We will give them hope because we will show them the love of Christ. We will show them that our Lord will never leave them. One of the children turned round to me a few weeks ago. And we had taken them food and we had paid their rent and they were about to be ousted from their home. And we had saved those things for them. And before they had been so disheartened and in tears, their father, their husband had been killed by ISIS. And we had given them everything. And one of the children said to me, Yeshua sent you to us, didn't he? Yeshua sent you to us. I said, he did, because he loves you. And then just 3 or 4 weeks ago, the little boy who had lost everything, before he used to just say, all I want is my daddy. All I want is my daddy back. And he looked at me and he said, Abuna, will you be my daddy now? And I said, of course I'll be your daddy now.
So how do you, who have such a heart for reconciliation, how do you reconcile the nature of the fact that the Christian community in Iraq is being eviscerated or being compelled to leave with your hope for ultimate reconciliation even within Iraq? I mean, how do you bridge that spiritually?
Well, the fact is that ultimately, reconciliation is spiritual. Ultimately, you're talking about our people being reconciled to God forever. Ultimately, we are seeing that you can't fight these evil forces from the sky. They need to be attacked on the ground. And if we're not prepared to do that, we are not prepared to save our people.
So when you look at the threat of ISIS right now, through the lens of a pastor's heart, someone who believes in reconciliation, if you were controlling the world armies, what would you have done right now? What would you do in that region of the world militarily? I know you're not a military guy, but you've seen it.
I would have... The only solution is troops on the ground, fighting from the sky, fighting in a way which might seem safe will not work.
How big of a threat is ISIS today? As we're sitting in this beautiful church, how big is that threat in the Middle East of ISIS?
The threat of ISIS in the Arab Middle East is huge. Lebanon, Syria,
Libya,
even Jordan.
Yes.
The threat is there in good countries. The threat is not there against Israel.
From ISIS.
From ISIS.
They'll rely on Hamas for that.
Because IDF will deal with it.
Yeah.
They can't beat the IDF. If they want to learn really how to fight war, they need to see the IDF, and they will know.
So what happens if ISIS is left unchecked? What if the world leadership just says, we'll try to contain them, which is, seems to be very difficult, but we'll just, they've got those territories, contain them to those territories.
Well, the world leadership, if it's intelligent, and a lot of it is not, will realize that they can't contain them by what they are doing at the moment. They've got to take a radically different approach. It's the only way forward. And the fact is, I might be about peace and reconciliation, but sometimes you have to take a very forceful attitude.
Overwhelming force?
Overwhelming force. You have to show that you have more power than they have. At the moment, they have got more power.
Mm. We just talked about overwhelming force necessary, but your ministry has had a refocus with basically a relocation ministry to get your people out of Iraq into Jordan. Tell us what the project is there and exactly what's happening.
Well, our work isn't only in Jordan.
I know that.
We're doing a lot in Kurdistan. A lot of the people are fleeing north.
Okay.
And so...
So let's talk about that. So you got people fleeing north to Kurdistan.
Yes.
And then west over to Jordan.
And a lot have gone to Turkey as well. But I can't do Turkey as well as Jordan and...
Which brings up... Let me ask you about that. Because Turkey is something that we've been concerned about. You say you can't do Turkey as well. Why is that?
Because it's just too much for one person.
Again, folks, that was part of Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White. After this break, you will hear more from that interview. Folks, if you want to learn more about the ACLJ's work on behalf of the persecuted church around the world, I want you to go to aclj.org. There's a lot of information there about the work in the ISIS-controlled region and around the world, folks. Again, aclj.org. And after this break, you'll hear more from Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White.
Americans' freedom under attack by the biggest and most dangerous branch of government, the federal bureaucracy. In his new book, Undemocratic, How Unelected Unaccountable Bureaucrats Are Stealing Your Liberty and Freedom, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow sounds the alarm. It's a powerful look at what's become the fourth branch of government. It's not in the Constitution, but the federal bureaucracy has become an out-of-control, unelected monstrosity that robs Americans of their rights through endless rules and regulations. In Undemocratic, Jay Sekulow, a New York Times bestselling author, provides a plan to fight back and explains why personal freedoms don't have to become a thing of the past. This must-read is available now in bookstores nationwide. You can order your copy online at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Apple iBooks. Learn more at undemocraticbook.com. It's time to put an end to the systematic abuse of the federal government. When it comes to protecting your Christian beliefs and constitutional freedoms, the American Center for Law and Justice is at the forefront, in the courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. Now more than ever, you need the American Center for Law and Justice on your side. At the direction of Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow, the American Center for Law and Justice is countering organizations like the ACLU. The ACLJ has been called, quote, the leading advocacy group for religious freedom by one of the nation's most influential publications. Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.
this feeling of unease.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. In addition to the interview with Cannon White that you've been listening to from several months ago, Jay had an additional opportunity to sit down with Cannon White in the radio studio to do a little bit more detailed information and conversation about this issue and about his work in the region. I wanted to play for you just a portion of that interview. It gets a little bit into more of the details. So again, this is Jay in the radio studio with the Vicar of Baghdad, Cannon Andrew White.
Our guest is Cannon Andrew White, the Vicar of Baghdad. He's certainly given us a lot to think about and a lot to pray for and a lot of reasons we want you to help. Jordan, let's take some more calls. If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. Let's take another phone call, Jordan.
Yeah, Mike is calling in from Massachusetts on line one. Mike, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Jay. Thank you for everything. And
thanks.
My prayers are with the folks out there.
Thank you.
This really bothered me years ago, and you have touched on it, and I just was thinking maybe it might be helpful to touch on it again about the president and where we derive our laws from, and especially what he puts his hand on when they swear him in.
Well, you're talking about the being a nation of citizens. Let me play for everybody. I have said this. And people that listen to this broadcast know when I agree with the president on something, I say it. When I disagree, I say it. And I said that a lot of the problem in the Middle East started right here, is when the president went to Cairo in Egypt and made this speech and said these words. Listen.
You know, I've said before that one of the great strengths of the United States is, although, as I mentioned, we have a very large Christian population, we do not consider ourselves a Christian nation or a Jewish nation or a Muslim nation. We consider ourselves a nation of citizens.
That's a complete non sequitur, because every nation is a nation of citizens. You could be under a totalitarian regime and still be a citizen. You could be a citizen of Nazi Germany. It's still a citizen. So a nation of citizens is not an answer. You have to have a foundation where your thoughts, beliefs, practices, understanding of how government's supposed to work come from. Ours is within the Judeo-Christian tradition. That doesn't mean if you're not Jewish or Christian, you don't get to participate fully in the government. Of course you do. But we've got to understand where our foundation is, Mike. And I appreciate you saying that, because I think it's important to come back to the foundations of this. Let me go to Cannon White on kind of touching on this point. You said that the United States is not sending out a clear signal right now.
No, it's not.
So what is the impact of that lack of clarity?
The impact of that lack of clarity is that the evil people who are trying to destroy us are given more power and more force. And they think as if they have wisdom. What you say, Jay, is absolutely right. We must have a Judeo-Christian foundation. That is where we come from. That is what we believe. That is what we stand for. And that is the only liberty given to our people. Without that, we will be destroyed.
So, Jordan, following up with Cannon White, what he just said, which I think is critical here, and that is this lack of leadership. Let's talk about this authorization for military force, what it means, what it doesn't mean, and the danger that it proposes if it were to, in fact, be passed, which I don't think it will be at this point.
That's right. Well, what the president would want it to mean is basically a message to ISIS and to our allies around the world that we may continue airstrikes. There may be some limited ground forces and special operations used, very limited, but that there will not be any massive troop movements. There will not be taking over of cities, towns, or villages. And that's what it says. Now, at the same time, we have leaders from our military talking about using military force to take back cities like Mosul in Iraq. So the question is, could you even accomplish that under this authorization of use of military force? So where are we? Congress is likely going to send something back. They'll send back something to President Obama to put on his desk, but it will look very different. So for all those who think that this Congress has actually tried to stop or thwart President Obama on this issue, what they're likely going to do is give him more power and make sure our military leaders are not constricted in what they're able to do in fighting ISIS and the strategies that they want to try and implement in stopping ISIS.
Jordan, let's take another phone call here.
Yep, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Christina in Pennsylvania. Online to Christina, welcome to Jay Secchio Live.
Hi, Christina, you're on the air.
Hi, Jay. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I sort of have an opposing view. I believe that, you know, it's fine that you can have this opinion, but I feel like it's very difficult to call one a Christian and have that. I believe that when Christ disarmed Peter, he disarmed all of us. And I believe that Christ always provides another way. He's the third way.
Christina, let's walk through this for a moment here, and I'm gonna ask Cannon White to talk about this as well. You don't really believe that when Jesus disarmed Peter, that he disarmed all of us. Do you really believe that?
Oh, I definitely do.
My relatives were Nazi Germany, and there was opposition to keep the Nazis from killing by gas chambers and ovens my family members, they should have just willingly just walked in, right?
I think that Jesus provides...
Whoa. I'm asking you a question. You just said we're supposed to put down our arms. Do you really believe that? In that context, what I just gave you, that where my relatives were in Nazi Germany, they should have just willingly walked into the gas chambers and nobody should have put up a resistance.
I don't agree with it one bit.
No, do you think that it was okay well, let me ask you the next question. Do you think it was okay for someone to say, you know what, we're going to do armed resistance. May not work, but we're going to do armed resistance here. Or the United States coming and saying, you know what, we're going to stop the Nazis from this genocide because it's wrong.
You know that.
Well, then what's the difference between that and, I'm going to ask Cannon White this, what's the difference between that and what's happening to Christians and Muslims that disagree with ISIS every single day? Is there any difference? It's the same kind of killing.
Absolutely. And we have to stand firm. We have to have the ability to protect those that need protecting with power.
Now, Cannon White, Christina, so you know, his ministry is based on reconciliation. Okay? It's a reconciliation-based ministry. So I think your interpretation of that scripture is incorrect, both on a theological standpoint, but I will tell you this, on a legal standpoint, there is no justification. If you are being attacked, if your country is being attacked, or if a people's group is being eliminated because of who they are, that is a war crime under international law, and we should never, ever simply let that kind of atrocity happen.
So what people are talking about is the protection of America.
Right.
What about the protection of our Christian people?
Right. Our brothers and sisters in the greater Middle East right now.
We are family.
Yeah. And we need to act like that. So, Christina, with due respect, I appreciate you listening to the broadcast. We completely and fundamentally disagree.
Again, folks, you've been listening to Jay's interview with the Vicar of Baghdad, Canon Andrew White. If you want to hear more about Canon White's work, you can find that online at aclj.org. We also have a special documentary on the persecuted church. It includes Canon White. It is called Let My People Go. It's at letmypeoplegomovie.com. Again, letmypeoplegomovie.com. Or to hear more about the work of the ACLJ, both for the persecuted church and also our work domestically, you can go to aclj.org. You're going to find a lot of information there about the work that lies ahead in 2016. We are certainly going to be calling on all of you to be a very important part of that. Again, for more information on all of these issues, you can find it online at aclj.org. Happy New Year, and we'll talk to you next week.
Stand this evil anymore.
Now you can make a difference. There's not a better time to stand with the ACLJ than right now. Declare your membership today. The ACLJ is dedicated to protecting your religious and your constitutional freedoms. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or online at aclj.org.